Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, January 8th, 2021. Congressional Democrats move ahead towards impeaching President Donald Trump ahead of President-elect Joe Biden's January 20th inauguration. This as the fallout continues from Wednesday's pro-Trump riot that broke into the U.S. Capitol building while electoral votes were being counted. Also today, President Trump confirming in a tweet that he will not attend the inauguration, and Joe Biden responding that that is perhaps the only thing he and Donald Trump agree on. President-elect Biden introduces more cabinet nominations, including for Labor Secretary Boston Mayor Marty Walsh and for Commerce Secretary Rhode Island Governor Gina Raimondo. And the jobs report from the Labor Department is out. U.S. losing 140,000 jobs in December, unemployment rate staying at 6.7%. Flags throughout the U.S. Capitol complex in Washington, D.C. are at half-staff honoring Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, who died Thursday night from injuries sustained Wednesday during that assault on the Capitol building. U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington, D.C. opening a federal murder investigation into the death. Condolences to the family coming from all quarters and everyone referring to Sicknick as a hero who died in the line of duty. In all, five people dying from what happened that day. President-elect Joe Biden asked about the House's plans to impeach President Donald Trump for encouraging the rioters. Biden saying that's a decision for members of Congress. But in a follow-up question, the president-elect was asked a more general question.
I want to pick up on something that you just said about President Trump actively encouraging the insurrection at the Capitol. Given that, given the perceived threat that he poses, my question to you is not so much about the role that Congress should play in impeachment, but rather, should President Trump, in your estimation, remain in office?
I've been saying for now well over a year, he is not fit to serve. He is not fit to serve. He's one of the most incompetent presidents in the history of the United States of America. And so the idea that I think he shouldn't be out of office yesterday is not the issue. The question is, what happens with 14 days left to go or 13 days left to go? And I think that what 81 million people stood up and said, it's time for him to go. And the United States Senate voted 93-6 to confirm that we should be sworn in. We were duly elected. So I think it's important we get on with the business of getting him out of office. The quickest way that that will happen is us being sworn in on the 20th. What action happens before or after that is a judgment for the Congress to make, but that's what I am looking forward to, him leaving office. I was told that on the way up here, way over here, that he indicated he wasn't going to show up at the inauguration. One of the few things he and I have ever agreed on. It's a good thing I'm not showing up.
Earlier, you'd said that you'd hope that he would show up only in the sense that it was valuable to send a signal to the world about the transfer of power. You've clearly changed your perspective on that.
Because he has clearly demonstrated, he's exceeded even my worst notions about him. He's been an embarrassment to the country, embarrassed us around the world, not worthy to hold that office. If we were 6 months out, we should be moving everything to get him out of office, impeaching him again, trying to invoke the 25th Amendment, whatever it took to get him out of office. But I am focused now on us taking control as president and vice president on the 20th. And to get our agenda moving as quickly as we can.
President-elect Joe Biden in Wilmington, Delaware. He was there introducing more cabinet nominations, and we'll have more on that later in this program. A story at Axios reads, the House is planning to introduce articles of impeachment against President Trump as early as Monday. Several sources familiar with the Democrats' plans tell Axios. The story goes on, if Trump is impeached by the House and convicted by the Senate, he could be barred from running for the presidency again in 2024. Assistant House Speaker Catherine Clark was on CNN Friday morning.
So we know that we have limited time, but that every day that Donald Trump is president of the United States is a day of grave danger. So we can use procedural tools to get articles of impeachment to the floor for a House vote quickly. We have already had Chairman Jerry Nadler, chair of the Judiciary Committee, say that he will use those tools to bring the articles as fast as possible.
When is that?
Well, that will be early as the mid next week. We do have a process we have to go through, but let's be clear what's at stake here. We have a president who incited a seditious mob to storm the Capitol. We now have 5 deaths from that. And the harm to our democracy is really unfathomable.
Congresswoman Catherine Clark, a Democrat, the assistant House Speaker. House Democrats held a private conference call today, a caucus meeting virtually. Associated Press noting that Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi said on that call, "We must take action." House Republican leader, the minority leader, Kevin McCarthy, said in a statement today that impeaching the president with just 12 days left in his term will only divide our country more. And Senator Roy Blunt, a member of the Senate Republican leadership, agrees.
Question right now, I know Democrats are trying to move forward with some sort of impeachment of the president. One, would you support removing the president from his office? And do you think that Senator Mitch McConnell would bring the Senate back early to try and complete that?
No, I think it's a ridiculous discussion to have. I've got enough decisions to make about things that can happen rather than to spend time on things that can't happen. Speaker knows this is not going to happen. Senator Schumer knows this isn't going to happen. You don't have the time for it to happen, even if there was a reason. So there's no reason to debate this except just pure politics.
Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri on KSHB-TV in Kansas City. He was also asked, in general, what he thought of the president's actions leading up to the riot outside and then inside the Capitol building on Wednesday.
Do you believe that President Trump bears any responsibility for what transpired on Wednesday? I know people who did breach the Capitol were saying fight for Trump as they entered the halls.
I'm sure that President Trump would have never wanted anything like that to happen, but when you start inviting people to Washington to march on the Capitol, you'd better know that there are potential consequences of that that you would never before. So hopefully we all need to learn lessons here of what we say and how we say it. Again, this discussion started by the Speaker and the Senate leader. That's the same kind of discussion that is not going to produce any good result. It's not going to produce a result at all. Why would you inflame further what's going on in the country right now?
Senator Roy Blunt, Republican from Missouri. President Donald Trump posting a 2.5-minute video last night in which he acknowledged President-elect Joe Biden's victory and condemned the violence that happened at the Capitol building. Today, President Trump, his Twitter account unblocked, tweeted, "The 75 million great American patriots who voted for me, America First, and Make America Great Again, will have a giant voice long into the future. They will not be disrespected or treated unfairly in any way, shape, or form." Another Republican, Senator Ben Sasse, says that he would consider articles of impeachment if the House passes them. Ben Sasse was on the program CBS This Morning.
Donald Trump has acted shamefully. He has been in flagrant dereliction of his duty, and he will be remembered for having incited this and for having drawn more division into an already divided people. That is who Donald Trump is. That is what his legacy is going to be. But I disagree with you that the most important question is inside the next 12 days. Mm-hmm. The most important question is what happens to America after the next 12 days, and not just 12 weeks and 12 months from now, but 12 years from now. And so the House, if they come together and have a process, I will definitely consider whatever articles they might move, because as I've told you, I believe the president has disregarded his oath of office. He swore an oath to the American people to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. He acted against that. What he did was wicked. That said, the question of what the House does now and how the Senate responds to it over the next 12 days is a critically important question. Mm-hmm. But the most important question is the prudential one of how we bring the country back together 5 and 10 and 15 years in the future. And there's a lot to be hashed out there.
At Senator Ben Sasse on CBS Friday morning. When the House and Senate do return to session, could happen next week. You could follow it live, gavel to gavel, on the C-SPAN networks or listen on the free C-SPAN radio app. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, in a letter to other House members, saying today she also called the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, quote, to discuss available precautions for preventing an unstable president from initiating military hostilities or accessing the launch codes and ordering a nuclear strike. The Republican National Committee Chair Ronna McDaniel also condemning the U.S. Capitol security breach this week by pro-Trump rioters. She said the violence does not represent acts of patriotism, but an attack on our country and its founding principles. McDaniel spoke at the RNC winter meeting in Florida, Amelia Island, where she was reelected unanimously to a third term. And also in her victory speech, she set her sights on the next election.
Are encouraged by our track record in competitive House and other down ballot races, we are disappointed with the results elsewhere. And I've said a few times this week, and I know this probably isn't proper English, but I am pissed. I am pissed about losing critical elections. I'm so mad. And it's okay, because we're going to take that into 2022. And we have a lot of hard work to do to take back the Senate and the House in 2022. But I am mad, and I am not going to let socialism rule in this country. And I'm going to work with every single one of you to make sure we squash it, we take back the House, and we take back the Senate in 2022. We are not going to cede our country to the far left who want to turn towards socialism, institute the Green New Deal, and remake America as we know it, and take away my right to call myself a mother, a wife, a sister, a woman. Give me a break. So Democrats, get ready. Buckle your seatbelts, because we are coming.
Republican National Committee Chair Ronna McDaniel in Florida at the RNC winter meeting after winning a third term. Politico writes that McDaniel invited roughly a dozen potential 2024 presidential candidates to the meeting, the most explicit move she's made yet to show that the committee will be impartial going forward and not simply an extension of President Trump's political machine, even as he openly mulls a comeback bid. Stocks closing today at another record high, ending the first trading week of the year. Dow up 56, NASDAQ up 134, S&P up 20. And this comes after release of the December jobs report showing a net job loss for the first time since April. The U.S. economy has 10 million fewer jobs than it did before the coronavirus pandemic. President-elect Joe Biden reacting.
Consider the December jobs report released today. The anxiety and fear of the women and men out there reminds me of when President Obama and I were sworn in during the Great Recession of 2009. This December jobs report shows millions of Americans are still hurting through no fault of their own. We lost another 140,000 jobs, the first negative jobs report since the height of the pandemic in the spring. More people have just lost a job, while many have been out of work for a long time. And the ongoing gap between Black and Latino unemployment remains much too large, that gap. And in many ways, the jobs report is a pandemic report. With the pandemic raging, people are losing work and losing hope. The hospital industry, restaurant, bars lost more than 372,000 jobs. State and local governments are slashing jobs. 20,000 local educators lost their jobs just last month. In the midst of this pandemic, there are millions of people out of work, unable to pay their rent or their mortgage. They're waiting in line for hours and to get food from a food bank. Think of this, the United States of America. People are lined up for miles in their automobiles, waiting to get a meal to put on the table to feed their family. And they're left staring at the ceiling, so many, unable to sleep, worried will they have their health insurance, wondering if they'll be okay. The bottom line is the job report shows we need to provide more immediate relief for working families and businesses now. Now. Not just to help them get on the other side of this painful crisis, but a larger purpose, to avoid a broader economic cost that exists out there that will happen due to long-term unemployment, hunger, homelessness, and business failings.
President-elect Joe Biden in Delaware, he said that next week he'll give more details on that next coronavirus pandemic relief package that he'll present to Congress. He said it would be in the trillions of dollars. One of the elements of it is increasing the stimulus checks to Americans to $2,000 from the current $600. But Democratic Senator Joe Manchin today said that he is opposed to that. Manchin telling the Washington Post, absolutely not. No, getting people vaccinated, that's job number one. Joining President-elect Biden today, his final nominees rounding out his cabinet, including for the Secretaries of Labor and Commerce. For Labor Secretary, it's Marty Walsh, who is currently the mayor of Boston.
Today, we're at a crossroads in America. It's a time of great hardship. Working people holding the country together right now. I've seen it up close as mayor of the city that I love, Boston. Healthcare workers, first responders, grocery store workers, delivery drivers, postal workers, sanitation workers, custodians, coming through for us under impossible conditions. But this isn't just because of the COVID crisis or the economic crisis that threatens their well-being. Working people have been struggling for a long time under the erosion of their rights and the deep inequalities of race, gender, and class. For the last 4 years, they've been under assault, attacks on their rights, their livelihoods, and the unions that built the middle class. We are facing hard times, but nobody's tougher than the American worker. And now we have the opportunity to put power back in the hands of working people all across this country. And that is a good thing for our economy and for our country. We can defend workers' rights. We can strengthen collective bargaining. We can grow union membership. We can create millions of good-paying jobs with investments in infrastructure, clean energy, and in high-tech manufacturing, along with the workforce training to help get those people into those good jobs.
Labor Secretary nominee Marty Walsh. President-elect Joe Biden said he considered nominating Senator Bernie Sanders, a former rival for the presidency, for Labor Secretary, but that both of them agreed that with the U.S. Senate now in Democratic control by such a slim margin, it would be risky to have Senator Sanders leave and give the governor of Sanders' home state, Vermont, who is Republican, the opportunity to appoint a replacement. President-elect Biden's nominee for Commerce Secretary announced today, Gina Raimondo, governor of Rhode Island.
When I announced my run for governor, Rhode Island was in the midst of an 8-month streak as the state with the highest unemployment rate in the nation. But over the last 6 years, we've worked hard, we fought back, and we've grown our way back, achieving a record number of jobs and the lowest unemployment rate in over 30 years. Now, we did that by bringing together our workers and businesses, working together, coming together in common cause. We invested in our people, in their skills, their opportunities, and their dreams. We helped new businesses launch, and we sparked others to hire and grow responsibly. That's the same vision, the same faith in American workers, in American entrepreneurs, that I see in the Build Back Better agenda. It's a vision for an inclusive recovery that lifts up those who have been left behind. It's a vision for a national effort that provides skills, training, and wraparound supports to get Americans back to work. It's a vision for rebuilding American manufacturing and bringing back jobs to America from overseas.
Commerce Secretary nominee Gina Raimondo. President-elect Joe Biden also nominating today Isabel Guzman for SBA Administrator and Don Graves as Deputy Commerce Secretary. And the president-elect says that he has now nominated his entire cabinet. He says it will be the most diverse ever and for the first time split evenly between men and women. He's calling on the U.S. Senate to confirm them all quickly. Washington Today continues in a minute. Welcome back to Washington Today. On the coronavirus pandemic, and specifically the vaccines, President-elect Joe Biden's transition says it plans to release every available vaccine dose when he takes office. That's a change from the Trump administration's strategy of holding back half the vaccine production to ensure second doses are available. And today, the head of the Food and Drug Administration is urging states to allow lower priority groups to get vaccinated if their doses would otherwise go to waste. Dr. Stephen Hahn was on a program hosted by the Alliance for Health Policy.
I think we've heard from the ACIP the prioritization. And I'll tell you, as a clinician and as a member of the White House Coronavirus Task Force, that prioritization makes sense. Long-term healthcare facilities, healthcare workers, those over the age of 65, those with comorbidities, frontline workers, police, firemen, food workers, et cetera. That makes sense to me. And then, of course, there's the 1C group as well. So I think there's a science and data-driven approach to those recommendations. And I feel that those are very reasonable to follow. However, you know, we've heard in the press that some folks have said, okay, I'm waiting to get all of my healthcare workers vaccinated. We have about 35% uptake of the vaccine. I think it's reasonable to expand that to the 1B, for example, and vaccinate based on 65 and older, not going outside of the guardrails of the recommendations of the ACIP, because I think they're really important, but maybe going down to the next level as you try to use as much vaccine as possible. Now, again, the governors know what's going on in their states. It has to be a data and science-driven approach to this. And I know that we at the White House Task Force, as well as at the CDC, are very happy to have these discussions with the various states and entities about this. You may have seen recently a report in the press of a Georgetown law student who happened to be at a pharmacy, and the pharmacist had a dose of vaccine that they were going to have to throw out. Because it was getting close to the time when it would be expired, and they offered it to this Georgetown law student. That's an example of something that's a pragmatic approach. Rather than throwing out a vaccine, if you have the opportunity to vaccinate someone, that's a reasonable decision to make, and I don't think that I think we need to have that flexibility and that pragmatic approach to things.
The FDA Commissioner, Dr. Stephen Hahn, he referred to the ACIP, that's the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The U.S. hit a grim milestone on Thursday, exceeding 4,000 coronavirus deaths in a single day for the first time. That day, there were also nearly 275,000 new cases. Overall, more than 365,000 Americans have died from the coronavirus. When will it all end? A question to Dr. Anthony Fauci today. He's with the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases.
This is from one of our other presidents down the street, Dr. Crutcher, who's president of University of Richmond, says, when will we be able to resume normal human interactions?
Okay, well, that's dependent on us, Rob, because if we get the overwhelming majority of the population, and I would estimate, you know, based on our experience with measles, that should be somewhere between 70 and 85% to get what we call herd immunity, where the virus doesn't have any room to go anywhere because most everybody, but not everybody, but most everybody is protected. If we roll out vaccines and we're successful in convincing the overwhelming majority of people to get vaccinated, logistically, that would likely take us sometime towards the end of the summer. So let's say we start getting through the priority groups in February, March, April. April, we start open season. Anybody can get vaccinated. And we vaccinate effectively and efficiently in May, June, July, August. I believe by the time we get to the fall, if, and it's a big if that you have to underline, if we get that overwhelming majority of people vaccinated, I think we could start approaching a reasonable degree of normality towards the mid-fall of 2021.
Dr. Anthony Fauci at a virtual program today hosted by the Virginia Governor's Office. You can find the full video at cspan.org. Bloomberg News writes, Federal Communications Commission Chair Ajit Pai said he's abandoning a proposal to limit the liability shield for social media companies that President Donald Trump requested. At issue is Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act of 1996, which gives the likes of Facebook and Twitter broad immunity from lawsuits for decisions to take down users' posts. That was from Bloomberg. Chairman Pai made those comments on C-SPAN's The Communicators program this week.
On October 15th, you said that you intend to move forward with a rulemaking for clarity of Section 230. What's the status of that?
So the status is that I do not intend to move forward with a notice of proposed rulemaking at the FCC.
And why is that?
The reason is in part because given the results of the election, there are simply not sufficient time to complete the administrative steps necessary in order to resolve that rulemaking. And so given that reality, I do not believe it is appropriate to move forward.
And if you could, what would you like to see done to Section 230? What do you think should be done?
Well, there is now a bipartisan consensus among elected officials that the law should be changed. Now, obviously, the president believes it should be repealed. President-elect Biden has campaigned repeatedly on its repeal. But within Congress, there seems to also to be a consensus that it should be revised or reformed in some way. Now, obviously, in terms of changing the law, that's a decision for lawmakers to consider. But I do think that there are a certain bipartisan consensus areas forming regarding how it should be revised. It's a very complicated issue, one that I think that Congress will have to study and deliberate on very carefully. I personally would have to think about it more carefully in terms of the immunity provision, for example. But those are the kinds of things that I think the next administration and the next Congress will think about very carefully.
FCC Chair Ajit Pai, part of this week's The Communicators on C-SPAN. The full half-hour program airs Saturday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern on C-SPAN television or listen on the free C-SPAN radio app. Communicators also available as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. On this program, Ajit Pai also talking about broadband and the future of his agency under a Joe Biden presidency. Today is the 10th anniversary of the mass shooting in Tucson, Arizona at a constituent meeting of former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords. Six people were killed, 13 wounded, including Giffords, who was shot in the head. Today, she spoke with the Arizona Republic newspaper about her struggle to recover and also her work since then on gun control.
I've known the darkest of days. Days of pain and uncertain recovery. But confronted by despair, I've summoned hope. Confronted by paralysis and aphasia, I respond with grit and determination. I put one foot in front of the other. I found one word and then I found another. My recovery is a daily fight, but fighting makes me stronger. Words once came easily, today I struggle to speak, but I've not lost my voice. America needs all of us to speak out, even when you have to fight to find the words. I'm also in a second fight, the fight to stop gun violence. It's also a fight forged by tragedy and pain, a fight that can change lives. We are at a crossroads. We can let the shooting continue, or we can act. We can protect our families, our future. We can vote. We can be on the right side of history. Please join us in this fight. Thank you very much.
Former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords on this 10th anniversary of the mass shooting during which she was injured. Giffords' husband, Mark Kelly, was just sworn in last weekend as a U.S. Senator from Arizona. Thanks for joining us on Washington Today. Get the free C-SPAN Radio app, and remember this program available as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Have a good night and good weekend.